This is the FYI on Youth Ministry, a podcast from the Fuller Youth Institute. This episode is hosted by Jennifer Guerra Aldana and Brad Griffin, and our guest is Dr. Joyce Del Rosario. Today's episode is about leaders of color in primarily white spaces. But first, here are some experiences youth leaders of color shared with us.
As a BIPOC leader in a primarily white space, yeah, I felt like my energy was split in a lot of ways, having to both do the ministry work, to be with the students, to do the planning and the leadership, but then also that energy it takes to navigate a predominantly white space of having to communicate in certain ways or having certain expectations placed on me that weren't necessarily specifically related to the work, but felt like additional work that had to be done just to survive in that space.
Of course, it's a challenge. And I think as the person willing to go and take that challenge, you know, you need to be aware of that from both sides, from the people requesting your presence there. There has to be a balance of like, we can't expect everything to come from this person. That's impossible. They want to feel included and they want to have space for them to share their differences as well, but also be treated as part of the family. That's what my church did really good. But yeah, it has its risks and challenges for sure.
Well, hello everyone. My name is Jennifer Guerra Aldana, and I am so excited to be with you. I'm part of the research and resource team here at Fuller Youth Institute, particularly looking at diversity, equity, and inclusion. And I am so excited to be with you for this podcast episode with my co-host, Brad.
Hey, fun to be together for this conversation. I am Brad Griffin, Senior Director of Content here at FYI. And Jen, why are we having this conversation together?
For this conversation in particular, we wanted to center the conversations around the experiences and unique needs of leaders of color, the kind of needs we have when we serve in predominantly white spaces. We want to give you practical ideas for your own self-care. We want to invite white leaders, not just into awareness and conversation, but also into some helpful practices towards the end. So if you are not a leader of color or a leader who would identify as Black, Indigenous, Latinx, Asian, Asian American, Pacific Islander, or mixed, this doesn't mean this podcast episode is not for you. Quite the contrary, you are invited to listen, to learn, and to walk away with tools on how to best partner with the BIPOC leaders that may surround you.
Yeah, that's right. That's a great setup, Jen. And at FYI, we believe this is really important work, and it's important work for all of us. As a white male leader, I've learned and continue to learn from leaders like Jen and from leaders like our guest today, Joyce Del Rosario.
Yeah, doctor, that's right. For this conversation, we have invited our dear friend, colleague, scholar, pastor, Dr. Joyce Del Rosario. She is second generation Filipino American and has more than 20 years of experience in youth ministry, both in her research and in her work. She seeks to transform the inequitable systems by centering the voices of communities that have been minoritized. And so welcome. We are so glad that you're with us, Joyce.
Thanks. It's good to be here. Yeah. I want the horns. Yeah. Bow, 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 bow.
Yes, there are actual confetti cannons that go off every time Joyce walks into a room. So you should imagine this in the very space that you're listening to this. Just poof.
It's a party every time.
It is a party. And Brad, tell us why it is a party to have Joyce with us.
Absolutely. Joyce is a longtime friend of FYI. She holds a PhD from Fuller and teaches at the Pacific School of Religion. She's a professor there. Joyce has been an expert advisor for us for a number of different projects, and most recently, the Character and Virtue Development and Youth Ministry Project. Joyce, you, over the years, over the decades, you've invested and served and led and conducted research on realities of an often forgotten group of young people in our communities, single mothers. And I just, yeah, I feel like anytime I hear a little tidbit from you about that, I'm always just reminded about how important it is that you have like paid attention in a particular way. We've just learned a lot from that. And so I wonder, as sort of another way to intro you, if you'd give us a little snapshot of something you've learned from, you know, from living among and centering young mothers.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I mean, one, any youth leader knows it is humbling to work with youth anyway. I mean, they, no matter what.
Amen.
You know, and I came in, I was working at New Creation Home Ministry, which is the residential program for teen moms. And I thought, you know, I've had years of experience with kids. I've done this for a long time. And they just opened up my world in new ways. One, you know, doing programs with kids is very different from living with them and being in a 24/7 experience with them. I mean, so now this time I'm in their lives, I'm in their love lives, I'm in their work lives, I'm in their school lives, I'm in their parenting lives. And so it really opened up my own understanding of the realities, particularly for low income or no income folks. It opened up the realities of girls trying to raise a baby who are undocumented and don't qualify for government subsidies. It opened my eyes to childcare and how expensive that is. And it's, you know, even more expensive than what they can earn, minimum wage, in their own, you know, part-time jobs. And so there are so many things that I learned, and I was truly humbled and honored to get to journey with them for a while.
That is so powerful, Joyce. And I think often, because when we talk about youth ministry, the quick division we go to is there are students and then there are parents. And that's such a common assumption that I made throughout my entire youth, you know, youth ministry career. And so what you come to remind us that there are many in our communities that actually carry both of those identities every day. They are both students and learning to be parents. And we need to pay attention to those biases that we carry. And well, biases is one of the reasons that we're here talking about this experience. Because, you know, Joyce, you and I have both had experiences where at times we may have been the only. Mm-hmm. At times we have been the only two.
Yep.
At times we've been one of few leaders of color in ministry spaces. I have a lot of memories of going to conferences. I am an extrovert. I love to learn. And so conferences for a long time were like my happy place. And there were also places of a lot of woundedness and a lot of moments of feeling really rejected or unseen. And in those moments, there was always that inevitable moment of connecting with another leader of color who was going through a similar experience, whether this was a glance across the room when someone said something inappropriate or when the big room felt a little too overwhelming. It's just there was just a little exodus and there was a little gatherings on the sides and in the aisleways and in the bathroom and in the parking. There's a lot of been holy moments in parking lot spaces. And so I'm wondering if you can share a story or experience about a time when you connected with another leader of color. What makes this kind of interaction helpful or life-giving?
Yeah. That's a great question. I'll be honest. When I'm in predominantly white spaces and I see another leader of color, I actually have to approach them cautiously because not all leaders of color know they're leaders of color.
Yeah, that's true.
And so I don't have that connection automatically with someone who might, you know, be Filipino or, you know, or is, you know, BIPOC in any way. And so, you know, maybe I'll say hi and just kind of your general you know, chit-chatty thing, but I'm usually trying to feel out, like, do you see me? And can I see you, but do you see you? And do you see me? And so there's those moments. And when those moments happen, those magical connections happen, it's like a drink in the desert moment, you know? It's this oasis of, okay, I can exhale now. You're safe. I'm safe. We can say the things that we both might be thinking, or we can ask and check with the other person if, hey, did you hear it that way? did that just happen? And we can check and talk to each other in different ways that we couldn't otherwise to other people, maybe in the conference or in the camp or whatever setting it is.
Yeah, no, that's so true, Joyce. It is refreshment when you do find people who can, one, identify the racial dynamics in the room, and two, are willing to then engage in that conversation, because not everybody is willing to step into a conversation, because those conversations are hard to have. I hear you.
Yeah, and so to throw another layer in the mix here, you both experience the world and ministry in specific ways, not just as, you know, Asian American, Filipina, Latin American, Guatemalan American, but also as women in leadership. And yeah, it adds to that complex dynamic. So I just wonder, Joyce, and then we'll bring Jen into this as well. You know, can you share some of how you've experienced being specifically a female leader of color in predominantly white or predominantly male or both spaces? And, you know, what are some of those most recurring challenges you've faced?
I'll give you two examples. There was one time, and this is sort of the meta youth ministry, right? I was at a conference with educators who teach youth ministers. So it was one of those things. So these were super youth ministers, I would say. And there was a point after the sessions, after the conference, that a few of them decided to go to a cigar bar to hang out. And I went, and my friend said, what are you doing? You have a hard time breathing. Like, are you sure you want to go to this cigar bar? And I thought, but how else am I going to meet people? How else will I talk to them if I don't join them? And so, you know, and not to say that that's, you know, smoking a cigar is a genderized thing, because I actually do enjoy a cigar every now and then. But, you know, it was something that they, because it was mostly a male group, not realizing who they might exclude in that kind of, you know, activity. So, I mean, that was kind of one that was like, I just knew I had to be there. And I didn't matter what my own physical conditions were, whatever. I didn't want my gender to be a thing. I wanted to join anyway. Another time, I was speaking at a camp, and it was a really large camp. It was, you know, kind of for the folks in the room, it was a big deal. And usually the speaker position was left for senior, older, whiter people, to male people. So when I spoke, there was a group that came in from a particular area. They brought 250 kids to this camp. The camp was probably 800 kids altogether. And they were mad that I was speaking. They were mad that it was a female speaking. Maybe they were mad because I was brown. I don't know. I am brown. But I knew that they were mad. And by the end of the week, I had one of the leaders come up to me, and he was in tears, and he apologized. And he said, I am so sorry. I did not realize how much my boys would connect with you. I forgot that they're being raised by their moms and their grandmas and their aunties. I forgot that the person of authority in their life is usually their moms. And so he didn't quite apologize that, you know, women couldn't speak, but he did apologize that, like, oh yeah, my boys can hear you. So, you know, those are the things that, you know, I just have to navigate sometimes of, like, you don't even know me, and I'm having to prove myself to you somehow. And, you know, for me, in the most conservative of spaces, I was talking to high schoolers. Those were kids. Like, if you want to kind of go it that way, I get that, but I'm teaching kids. Like, I'm actually in my right genderized space, I guess, if that's kind of where, you know, your theology goes. But, you know, so that's why I was really even confused. But that's, you know, I can teach children, but not in front of 800 children, because that's too much now. Like, I don't know. I missed that verse in the Bible where that wasn't allowed. So anyway.
We all did.
It's not there.
So anyway, those are some of the themes, like being excluded from groups or being questioned about whether or not I have the right to speak or lead or teach or preach or whatever.
Yeah. And if I could follow up on a word you said earlier, you mentioned being seen or not being seen. And Joyce, if you're comfortable sharing about this, I remember once meeting up with you when you were finishing your PhD. We met for coffee and you had recently dyed your hair. I think it was bright purple.
And I
asked you about it. And you said something like, I was just tired of not being seen. And I wonder if you could share a little bit about that aspect of your experience.
Yeah. So I'm technically 4'11 and maybe 3/4. I'm a brown Filipina American woman. And I can't tell when people don't see me because of my race, my gender, or my height. Sometimes maybe it's all of it. And so, yeah, this draw for me was I was at the airport and I was waiting in line to be helped. And then they looked at the person behind me and said, can I help you? And I said, I'm here. I'm standing right in front of you. And I was actually kind of mad because she was Filipina too, but that's a whole other situation. but it really made me think, like, even my own people don't see me. I'm coloring my hair because I'm going to make you see me. And I think for a good while, that was a running thing for my life of like, I'm tired of not being seen and having to demand it when I'm not that kind of person. I don't need the center of attention. I don't usually want the center of attention, but I would like to be seen when I'm present just for some reason.
It's fair.
Yeah.
And you're raising something, you know, so this is for, I don't know, any leaders on the call. I mean, on the call, who are listening to the podcast.
2022, Brad. 2022.
I know. Suddenly I went from podcast to live radio show. But please call in with your questions. Welcome. For Joyce.
I love it.
For any leaders who are listening in on this conversation, that... like there is a height dynamic here. There's there's a height bias, and you're facing like multiple biases at once when you just show up to be you, and that's a lot. And our cultural preferences for tall people, that maybe deserves a whole episode in and of itself. Well, and part of the dynamic you're continuing to get at is this, like, if you're a white man over 6 feet tall, you show up in those spaces and feel like you already have authority to speak.
Yep.
And
yep.
So Jen, you wrote a blog a little while back about healing steps for leaders of color serving in white spaces. It's a post that people come back to, they reach out to us about sometimes. And I wonder, like, do people want to talk to you about that? What kinds of conversations have you had about that?
Yeah, the journey to that blog post in itself is a whole thing. I was sitting with another woman of color on our Fuller Youth Institute team, and I was debriefing an encounter that just happened, and she asked me, like, what would you tell another leader in your shoes? And I just kind of started to, like, verbally process a bunch of things. And right where we were having that conversation, Brad, you walked by the table we were at, and you, like, said hello, and I said, you know, Brad, I'm processing something here, and I started to process, and you said, Jen, you should really put that in writing. And Brad is constantly thinking about what could be a good blog post. And I saw the blog post look in Brad's eyes. And I said, Brad, did I just commit myself to a blog post? And he said, only if you want to. But I really do think you're onto something here. And so I sat down and I started to think about all of my experiences, mostly at conferences or ministry training spaces. And so the four things that I was having conversations with leaders is, to first retreat when the pain is there, retreat, take a pause, distance yourself from the situation, the person, the moment, let yourself be human and feel it. For a long time, I felt really alone in expressing, and all of the things that felt really difficult felt really small. I had a hard time validating that it should be spoken out loud because I didn't want to cause more trouble. I didn't want to, be considered that, angry Latina woman who is fussing about everything. But at some point, I have to let it out. The exhaustion, the frustration, it's important to release it. And release it in a myriad of ways, whether that's communicating it, whether that's artistic, an expression, movement, or laughter. And when we're ready to step into what I call the reintegration, is if I'm going to reengage again, how do I want to reengage? How do I want to step back into this conversation? What do I need to step back into this conversation or this space? And lastly is to invite. It was when I actually started to bring other leaders of color and allies around and say, you know, this is really painful. And could you hold this with me? Or next time you're in the room with me, could you be the one that says something? Or next time you're in the room, can you just check on me afterward? I now have a group of people that I know walk in with me to those spaces, whether physically, spiritually, or emotionally, and are going to be ready to hold, to process, to come alongside at a drop of a text. And I hope we get to the place where we don't even need to have conversations like these. But until we get there, I need a group of people who will hold me and walk with me as I retreat, those who will hold my processing, those who will be with me as I reintegrate, and those that I invite in it. I wrote it a time ago, and yet I keep coming back to them. I keep coming back to these steps, and I'm sure there are so many more that could be added to this. It was simply my real-time processing with another leader of color that ended up creating this blog post. And I've been so grateful for how many people it's been a conversation for and with. And I get why. Because when you feel so alone and you feel so unseen, my prayer and my hope was that people would not feel so alone and so unseen. And you don't have to hide it. You don't have to pretend it's not happening. Because it just gets worse if you pretend it's not happening.
That's really helpful. Joyce, I wonder if you could share a couple of your own, you know, practices that you find helpful or that have kept your ministry sustainable when you're working in predominantly white spaces.
Yeah. You know, I'm on some of those text threads with Jen, thank goodness. But, you know, that's important. I have three or four groups of those text threads with different kinds of groups and different kinds of people, but mostly all BIPOC. Or, you know, women of color in particular, so that we can, yeah, have that group with us all the time. Aside from that, if I want to go, if you're talking sustainable for a long time, no, we'll go from for younger leaders and for more seasoned leaders. Let's do that. For the younger BIPOC leaders, I met someone a little while ago who's a youth pastor in Texas, and she's biracial, Asian American, and in listening to her, because she's in a predominantly white space, she feels like she's the only one who can give voice to her people, the only one who can give voice to other Asian Americans. And she felt the weight on her shoulder. And I kept trying to remind her, like, you're not the only one. There are those of us who have been there before and who are still around. And I didn't want her to carry that weight unnecessarily. But because in her sphere, in her space, she felt like she was the only one, it feels like you're the only one in the world. And so for people who are, you know, in beginning their ministry, I just want to tell you, you're not alone. There are others. And maybe, you know, maybe it was going to take a while for me to find another Filipina leader in particular, but I definitely found my Black friends and my Latina friends and my other Asian American friends. And, you know, so it, there's other people that where you don't have to be alone. And then, you know, when we're talking sustainability, getting, you know, like I said, I'm getting older. And so I'm now at a place where to go into predominantly white spaces, I go in with what feminist theologians call the hermeneutic of suspicion. The way that feminist theologians use it is that they read the text, the biblical text, with suspicion on who wrote this, who were they writing it to, why were they writing it, and kind of trying to get around the patriarchal voices that shaped whatever the biblical text was. And so I walk into organizations or other ministry spaces that are predominantly white with that same kind of hermeneutic in terms of, well, who's here? And I know they say they want this, but what are they actually doing? And I'm looking at the structures and their systems. The first thing I do is look at the senior leadership, and then I look at the boards, the elders. And if I don't, you know, see a diverse group in on their websites, and they say that they want a multicultural space, an inviting one, then I come in with a lot of guard. And I don't mean that to sound like, you know, be suspicious of everyone and like have your dukes up at all times, but Hurt and pain and stress often come from missed expectations. And when we can at least adjust our expectations accordingly, as long as I can just, as long as I know where you're at, now we can talk. But if you're more performative about how open you are to someone like me, then I don't want to believe you for what you say. I want to believe you for what you do. And so, you know, that's helped me, because I can be in hard conversations. I just need to know what we're dealing with. I know me. Do you know you? And then we can have that, you know, relationship in that space. Honest relationships are much easier to deal with than dishonest ones, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of well-meaning people there that don't quite live out what they say they want to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, Joyce, what I love is that you're inviting us for the both and, is that, mm-hmm. you know, part of what the blog I wrote was for, like, when it happens and it's right there and you feel like your heart is on your throat and you can't quite breathe and mm-hmm. you have that moment. But it's so important to think of, what are the questions we need to walk in with for sustainability long term? What are some mm-hmm. of those invitations that we won't take? Mm-hmm. I wish somebody would have told me that. My dad taught me no is a complete sentence, but I didn't know that I could say that to institutions. Mm-hmm. And it's okay.
And sometimes in the name of Jesus.
Yes.
And in the name of Jesus.
And in the name of Jesus. And so that's important to know, that those are all signs of faithfulness. Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. not yet, and no. Mm-hmm. None of them make mm-hmm. us more Christ-like. Yeah.
Yeah. I think all of that wisdom will be so helpful for listeners who are leaders of color, in particular, maybe younger leaders of color, or people who have felt like they've had to say yes, you know, to opportunities or to, mm-hmm. yeah, just those invitations that actually maybe no is a faithful response. Mm-hmm. I'll say, I mean, it's helpful. All of this is really helpful for me as a white leader as well. And for our white listeners, we often don't realize how much work and energy it can take for leaders of color to just show up and to show up in a space that isn't, you know, that wasn't created with them in mind, as you said earlier. And it's important for us white folks to work towards cultivating our own cultural awareness, fostering more inclusive environments so they're not so hard on leaders of color. And I mean, I think one of the first steps, it's an ongoing step, but one of those is growing our awareness of what it actually means that a space is predominantly white. I mean, we've been using that phrase here, but that's not only about the actual representation in the room. You know, we usually think about we white leaders often think about, you know, the actual like numbers or demographics or percentages in the room or the organization, but it's so much more than that. It's about the cultural values and assumptions that are built into the ways we invite, the way we gather, the ways we lead, the ways we host and cultivate the conversations, and who is making those decisions. I wonder, Joyce, if you could speak to, for your part, what does it feel like to really be seen and heard and to thrive in ministry as a leader of color in predominantly white spaces or in general? You know, what does that look like?
Whoa. Yeah. I've had students who were, their intersections, queer, African-American, female, and you know, other intersections, Chicano male, and one of the things that came out in our classes was that they felt seen, and they kept saying that, thank you for seeing me. And I realized they hadn't had a teacher who had yet experienced not being seen. And so they could feel, because I've had that experience so much, I do tend to, you know, kind of pay particular attention and listen for context and listen for where they're coming from and their experiences, and then relate that back to them. And I did it in a way to let them know I see you, but it's also because I needed to be seen myself. So it was like also almost maybe therapeutic on my part of like trying to work out the things that I need. It's like people, you know, parenting. It's like you parent the way that like sometimes that you wish you were parented.
That's right.
Deep into the psyche. But you know, I think that's, there's a gift in it when people, especially the you know, really very marginalized people who aren't used to being seen, oh my gosh, it breaks so many barriers when they are, because it's like they finally get to be 100% them in a new way. And I think that goes for kids, that goes for adults, that goes for everyone.
The first thing that came to mind when you were describing how you treat students in your classroom, it's just that you believe them. Mm-hmm. Like when they say something, it's not questioned or debated, or there's like a tit for tat, as if anybody ever enjoys that. You know, and when I think of moments where I have felt like my body feels relaxed and I feel like I could speak openly, it's been in places where leaders have seen what I have said and when it's been hard to say it, and they don't try to excuse it or debate it. They just ask questions of, help me understand. And I've experienced leaders who have made me feel like, we may disagree with the point of view, we may disagree with the decision, but I believe you that for you, this felt really difficult and I acknowledge it. And I'm not trying to defend the person who made you feel that way. And that's very unique because particularly when the hurt comes from a particular, you know, cultural like sign off in a meeting or the way things are done, I have felt that temptation in myself when I've had different students and I go, well, let me teach you about all the other things that you're not seeing as to why you shouldn't feel this way. I know what that temptation feels like. Yeah. And so I think of being believed and then being supported. And I think you're doing that well as a professor to say, I believe you when you bring this perspective up, and I will support you as the person with the most power in the room to make sure that you know that what you said is valuable and we should all believe you as well. And I think that's always very powerful in any space that we find ourselves in. And this season, we are ending every episode with very practical ideas and practices to help us care for ourselves as leaders as we are continuing to show up for our students and our communities and our loved ones. So what are some of the things that you're doing in this season to care, to make sure that you're up and walking and breathing as you do this work alongside others?
I'll break it down in a second, but the three practical steps I would say is know your location, remember your narrative, and take up space. And so when I say know your location, I mean, know who you are in the room and whether you're BIPOC or not, you know, what if you're a white leader, you know, from the Midwest, know your location in relationship to the other people in the room, know your gender, know your mental health, know your ableism, you know, in relationship to other people in the room. I think that's what happens with privilege, is we don't have to know that. And so that's been really important. Remember your narrative. This has been my self-care practice. And so I've been reading YA books, Filipino American literature, YA literature, and it's been really fun. And it's just been really fun to dig into kind of the new authors coming out and what they're seeing and what they're saying. And then, you know, getting to try out new, you know, Filipino food spaces. I mean, food is like another way of communicating to me. And so I'm in remembering my narrative and remembering my people. I'm listening to their stories, eating their foods, celebrating who they are, because it also celebrates me at the same time. And so that's what I've really tried to embrace. And then take up space. I colored my hair purple, blue, whatever. It was different colors at different times. But that was me trying to take up the visual space. And I think now I'm ready to not take up visual space, but I'm ready to take up sound space. I'm taking off the heels and I'm just going to speak louder and with more confidence and kind of, you know, with more authority from not, you know, whatever title or position, but more authority of, no, I know what I'm doing. I have done this for a while, and I do have things to say, and I believe God's called me to say certain things. And so there's a different way of taking up space that I think has provided some self-care in this moment for me. So yeah, those would be my three things.
That's amazing. I love it. Joyce, thank you so, so much for joining us for this conversation. It has been so rich and, as always, also very fun for me.
Always fun to be with both of you.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you so much, Joyce. Thank you. Thanks. And thanks to everybody for listening in today to this conversation on the FYI on Youth Ministry. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. You can find more content from the Fuller Youth Institute on social media or at our website, fulleryouthinstitute.org. If you appreciate this podcast, please share with anyone you think might also benefit from these conversations. Thanks to Joyce, Jen, and Brad for today's episode. And of course, thanks to our youth pastor voices, Jenna and Gonzo. As always, here is one more clip from a youth leader.
For helping me protect my energy or have my energy be restored, I do spiritual direction with an Asian American woman. So that's been really helpful for feeling validated, for even naming some of the things that I experienced and recognizing that, like, I'm not alone in my identities as a BIPOC woman leader. So that's been a really helpful practice. And then following women of color on Instagram who are leaders and who love Jesus, I think that's been really helpful too. And then I really like the Black Liturgies Instagram account and how the meditations or the breath prayers there helps in both naming experiences and then providing a tool or a practice to maybe push back against narratives that are harmful and be able to breathe in new narratives, or even not new narratives, but narratives that resonate with what's true, what I know to be true inside of me.